Good morning and welcome to Community Conversations. This is a series of pre-recorded interviews intended to last about 30 to 50 minutes. And we're hosting them right here on KRFY 88.5 FM on Tuesdays and Thursdays at 8 a.m. I'm your host today, Phil Huff. My usual host, Julie Calamine, is absent. I think she's out fishing somewhere. You might recognize us as the morning show hosts for Tuesdays. We were missing the morning show. We know a lot of people were too. This show is not intended to be a replacement for the morning show, but we hope it brings you items of interest to our people in our region about topics of interest, current voices, and useful stuff. So we're using new technology to record this, at least new to us, Zoom, and there may be the occasional internet hiccup due to bandwidth restrictions or otherwise. So please bear with us if you hear any gaps, such as you might hear in Zoom meetings these days. Today, we're going to mainly be talking about all kinds of outdoor gear with some guests that have been on before, and I'll be really excited to introduce them to you in a little bit. But we're going to do a first segment. We've been calling Open for Business because there is an exciting new business that is opening, and we want to hear more about it. It's the Upper Pack River Market, and with us today is Barbara Newke, the organizer of the market. Good morning, Barbara.
Oh, good morning, Phil. Thanks for having me on.
And welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So tell us about the Upper Pack River Market. What is it? How did it get started?
Sure. So the Upper Pack River Market is really exciting. It's just a farm and art market, about 50% farm, 50% art. And it's going to be opening this Saturday, June 6th. We'll be running the first and third Saturdays of every month through the summer. And it's really just a collaboration between the people that live in the Upper Pack Valley and the neighboring communities. We had some folks from Naples and Samuels. They're kind of all pulling together and trying to get this new market up and running.
So tell us a little bit more about who all is participating. Is it mostly folks who are growing stuff in the Upper Pack River? It sounds like a few from maybe out of the area, but and who's participating?
Yeah.
Who do you hope will come?
For sure. So all of the vendors are from the Upper Pack River Valley and neighboring communities. Like I said, Naples, you know, the Samuels area. We have gardeners, farmers, produce, eggs, honey, barbecue sauce. We've got artists. We have a luthier. We have a knife sharpener coming down from Bonner's Ferry for on-site sharpening. Soon as some restrictions lift, we're hoping to have some local musicians as well. So it's really a good cross section of our community. There's a lot of very creative and hardworking people that live up in that area, and they're all kind of tucked back in the woods. And this is a great opportunity to pull those people out and let them show off what they do.
Now, since we are recording this show, folks listening will have missed the very first one, but these are going to be held on a regular basis. Tell us about the days and times that they'll be held.
Of course. Yep, they will be the first and third Saturday of every month. We are running through September with probably a harvest day in October. So the next market will be on the summer solstice, Saturday, June 20th. And they run from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. at the Samuels store right at the intersection of the Upper Pack River Road and Highway 95 and the green grass right next to the store. So we'll be outdoors.
Oh, lovely. What do you expect is going to be offered here through June? I'm imagining lettuce and some other things that are early season crops here.
Yep, exactly. The cold crops, we got radishes and lettuce, greens, plant starts for those of you that aren't finished planting your garden yet. And then, we go from there. Peas should be coming in not too long and on it goes. Yep.
So tell us before we leave, is this an idea that came about in response to something specific with the COVID crisis, or have you been thinking about this for a while?
Actually, yeah. No, we've been individually thinking about it for a while, a couple of us on the Upper Pack River Road. And oddly enough, I approached the Samuels store last year to ask them if they would be interested in letting me organize something like that. And not more than a week later, another neighbor approached them, not knowing I had, and asked them the same thing. And a mutual friend got us together. And that is how the board of directors got formed. So we've been working at this since last summer and really hard at it since the holidays ended in December.
Sounds like all good local things, really grassroots.
Exactly. And, you know, one of our main focus, we have two main focuses. One is, of course, to showcase the talents and that lives in that area, but also to offer our community an opportunity to get together and hopefully strengthen those community ties. So many of us live tucked away in the woods, and there aren't really good opportunities for us to gather as a community and network and really get to know each other better. So this is going to serve two purposes there.
So if somebody's listening and they want to find out more, especially about how to participate as a vendor or supplier, who should they get a hold of and how should they get a hold of them?
Yep. So we have several means of contact. We have a Facebook page. It's Upper Pack Markets on Facebook. We have a website, which is upperpackmarket.com. You can email us at upperpackmarket@gmail.com. Those three things will get you contact information, emails, phone numbers, the like.
Yep. Very good. Well, before we go on to the rest of the show, any last thoughts for our listeners?
I don't think so. Just that we're all really, really excited. And I'm hoping, I know the weather might be a little drizzly on us, but I'm hoping some folks come out in the next couple of weeks and see what we have to offer and support our efforts.
Yeah.
It'd be great to see out there.
Nothing says summer quite like the farmer's market.
That's a fact.
Okay. Well, thank you for joining us today, Barbara.
Thank you so much for having me on, Phil.
So on to part two of our interview this morning. We're going to be talking all kinds of gear with a couple of folks who are no surprise guests to the morning show. They've been on before. We have Liz Thomas from Treeline Review, editor-in-chief and outdoor inspirer, and one of its co-founders, along with Naomi Huditz, chief operating officer, online editor, and the other co-founder of Treeline Review, a gear review site that we're going to get into, but they do all kinds of things. Welcome to the show this morning, Liz, Naomi.
Thanks for having us on, Phil.
Yeah, thanks, Phil. It's great to be here.
So last time both of you were on, or either one of you were on, I know we were talking about trails, the Pacific Northwest Trail, the Idaho Centennial Trail, and with all of the experience you've had, let's start a little bit with your background for getting into Treeline Review, your hiking background, and the other skill sets that you've developed over the years that helped you to set it up.
Sure thing, Phil. So Naomi and I have been long-distance hiking partners for a while. My background is I'm an outdoor writer. I've been professionally reviewing gear for outdoor media like Backpacker Magazine for many years. And I got the idea of creating Treeline Review as a place for side-by-side comparative reviews of outdoor gear. And I have a bunch of creative skills, but as far as numbers and any sort of data, my eyes start glazing over. And luckily, Naomi, my hiking partner, is very good at that. So between my creative side and Naomi's number side, I thought maybe we might have a chance of creating something that would actually be able to exist.
Yeah. And so my professional background before Treeline Review, I was an actuary for many, many years. So numbers are my game, I guess you could say. And I've sort of been informally testing gear by just hiking and using it through all these years. So it was a good fit.
So you both have great background and knowledge in terms of the gear that you've used, and you also have each represented some brands and done some writing in that context, in reviewing of gear, even whether you call it formally or informally, previous to this, haven't you?
I certainly have. I know that we've talked about this on the show before. I'm a little embarrassed, but at one point I held the women's unsupported speed record on the Appalachian Trail, and that afforded me the advantage of being a sponsored athlete for long distance hiking for many years. And in that process, that's really how I got introduced to the gear reviewing world. Then I went on to review gear professionally for outdoor media. So had to cancel all those sponsorships. I guess that's what happens when you age out. and really start thinking about what makes good gear, what makes gear that lasts, what makes gear that people find useful.
Mm-hmm. And you, can we mention your previous writing employer?
Oh, certainly. So I previously wrote for the New York Times outdoor or product review site, Wirecutter, on their outdoor team. And Treeline Review is a natural extension of my work there, being very objective, side-by-side comparisons, very journalistic in the way that we look at gear, not because our friend owns this gear company or some gear company paid us to do a review, but really trying to find the best for most people who are going out there trying to spend their hard-earned money on experiences in the outdoors.
Naomi, tell us, dive a little deeper.
I have not been a sponsored athlete like Liz, so that whole side of it is off my radar, to be honest. Mm-hmm.
But yet you have done some extended trips beyond the ones that you and Liz have done together.
Yes. Yeah. I've done a lot of what people call through hikes, like the big three in the US, the Pacific Crest Trail, the Continental Divide Trail, and the Appalachian Trail as through continuous through hikes. And then a bunch of smaller ones, including the Idaho Centennial Trail, which is ranking up there with one of my favorites. I'm not gonna lie. It's an amazing experience. I would hike it again in a second. Yeah. So.
Locally, we love that one too. And so you guys have a great marriage of experience and skills. And I think this is a good point to have you just tell us a little bit more about Treeline, what it is, what it does, so that our listeners have a better understanding as we talk about it, what Treeline Review is all about.
Yeah, definitely, Phil. So we were built on the idea that if you buy right the first time, it means you buy less stuff and you save money. Because at least for me, my first through hike of the Appalachian Trail, I ended up buying multiple backpacks and multiple tents. And, you know, at the end of the trail, I just had all this stuff. And a lot of it was stuff I didn't like. And it was just taking up room in my garage. And, you know, like 10 years later, I finally got rid of it. And it seemed like there really just had to be a better way to do this. And so Treeline was built on this idea that if you go into it having having read a review where people don't just say, oh, I love this thing, you all should get it. Instead, it's more like, here are all of the top ones out there, and here they are side by side. Here's how they perform side by side, that it would help people buy right the first time and end up with less junk.
It's a great vision. Was there an aha moment you can look back on and say, this is what I need to do?
Well, it might have started with cleaning out my garage. All the gear
that's in there. Okay. That's a great segue into the next line of questioning, which is, it was a startup at one point. We're now about a year and a half old?
Yeah, that's about right.
That must be daunting to start up a business out of a garage, basically.
There's no doubt about that. it's one of those things where you don't really know what you're getting into until you're in the middle of it, at least from my perspective. It was, and it still is, like just a wide breadth of things and responsibilities and tasks to do, which I never would have even known existed before this. So from that perspective, yeah, it was overwhelming. And in some ways it kind of still is overwhelming. There's still a lot to learn and a lot we want to do with our website.
I think it feels in many ways like through hiking, you start it not knowing all the questions that you should have asked and all the tools that you should have had. And you go in a little bit blindly with some trust that you'll make it work.
Yeah.
And it's been a very good, in many ways, through hiking has been a very good analogy for what we're doing.
That's a great analogy in some ways because of the determination it takes to succeed. Most startups don't last a year because of all the challenges there are, just as most through hikers don't make it through. It's a testimony to your commitment, your passion, and your drive that you've come this far. Tell us a little bit about how it has grown and evolved over this time.
Yeah, so since we started, it was started really as a word of mouth. We would tell our friends, hey, we're starting this thing. They would tell their friends about it. And it seemed like every month we were seeing double viewership. And it's really, we've been lucky enough to have people. I think Anish has been on the show, Heather Anderson, who she might still hold the speed record on the Pacific Crest Trail and the Appalachian Trail and the Arizona Trail. We've had some high profile shares. We've been on some podcasts, high profile podcasts. So it's really been a word of mouth as people go out, read what we have to say, find it trustworthy and accurate, and keep coming back as they really appreciate the advice that we're able to give and the thoroughness and obsessive research that we've put in.
And so out of full disclosure, I've used the site a couple times to make purchases. I've had decades of experience backpacking, but gear changes so frequently that when I went to buy a new backpack last year, I wanted a good comparison. And it was a marvelously easy experience from a user's perspective and very helpful. And so talk to us a little bit about the business model. Someone comes to it, they go to Treeline Review. Take us from their first experience with looking at the site to using it for information to their purchase. And explain a little bit about the steps involved and then how it functions as a business model.
Yeah, so some of the things that we have that are very beneficial for people who are researching gear include the summary table. So one of the things we're really proud of is that we're not only a gear review site, we come to our conclusions based on this three-sided triangle, which is our logo. The first is that we have our own personal testing of the, in some cases, thousands of miles and many through hikes worth of testing to really back up the long-term use of the product. On the other side of the triangle, we have this meta review process where we look at all the outdoor reviews that we can find from big media like Outside and Backpacker, Gear Junkie, those sorts of things to really figure out, okay, who does the outdoor media think is really great, or what models does the outdoor media think is great? And then we will scan, in some cases, hundreds or more than 1,000 customer reviews to figure out, okay, is this just something the media thinks is great and we think is great? What sort of things are everyday users, what sort of hangups are they having? Is there a common spot that always seems to break on this backpack? And so with that, those three parts of information, we're able to provide that for people who are looking for kind of a one-stop shop for all of their gear review information.
Mm-hmm. And so they go through the process and do the research on Treeline, and then they want to make a purchase. What happens?
So if they want to make a purchase, we have buy buttons that go to various outdoor retailers. Usually we try to favor ones that have, for example, easy return policies, warranties that are good, because that is something that's really important when you're choosing gear too, is if something doesn't fit right, for example. Fit is really important. We have big sections on how to fit any sort of item that where fit is required. You know, we want people to be able to have a quick and easy return. And we do have a relationship with these companies where there's no increase in price, but we do get a small percent commission if someone does purchase it. So if you went to the store, if you purchased it from their website, otherwise it'd be the same price, but that is how we keep the lights on, we keep the website going.
All right, so there's no membership fee, there's no subscription or cost to use Treeline Review, provided they follow the links, you make a little bit money back from the purveyors.
Completely. Yeah, it's completely free. You can go on there now and get all the information without a membership. And, you know, the thing is, if you don't like what we write and you aren't convinced, unless you feel really confident in our authority and the research we've done, we don't make any money. So we really have an incentive to make the very best, most accurate review and point you towards the best things. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you make a purchase and then say, you know what, Treeline did not do a good job, you're not going to come back. So we really have a strong business incentive to make sure that you're very happy with everything that we recommend.
So tell us about the reviewers. It's far more than just the two of you.
Oh, absolutely. I think we have almost 20, is that right?
20, I think so.
Yeah, and they come from all levels of expertise or areas of expertise, I should say, including whitewater rafting, biking, hiking, mountaineering, camping, thru-hiking. We're hoping to start getting into maybe some fishing reviews. Yeah, so we try to rely on our network of not necessarily friends, but just connections, I should say, throughout the outdoor industry. And those connections also make connections, and that's how we're expanding our reviewers.
So it's come to be much more than just the best, lightest weight, long distance hiking community gear. It's all the things you just described are categories.
Right.
Our snow section right now is possibly even bigger. Snow sports section is possibly even bigger than our through hiking section, which is amazing considering I am not really a snow person at all.
So do you have any sense for how large your audience is? How many folks check in on a regular basis?
We're getting around 40,000 page views a month right now. So we're still trying to grow that.
It sounds like a lot. I'm sure the way it filters out, you have room for more.
Yeah, definitely. And go ahead.
Let's dive in a little bit to some of the gear trends. And I don't know if we want to take this by topical area that you cover, or if we just want to talk about general trends right now in the recreation industry. Liz, you mentioned that snow sports are really hot. What do you see right now as the general trend in folks who are looking at outdoor gear?
Yeah, well, I mean, part of the question is this pre-lockdown or post-lockdown? We've seen a lot of really interesting trends just within the last month or so, with people really thinking a lot more about car camping as far as, through hiking is a big part of what we cover, and a lot of the trails people have been discouraged from through hiking. So really thinking in terms of close to home, what can I do in my own backyard, in the parks and the rivers that are nearby me? And one particular that's been really great for us is kayaking. People have been doing a lot of water sports recently.
I hear biking is really hot right now too. At least some of the local bike shop owners say they're doing great business.
Oh yeah,
that is true. Sure. And everything bike related for that matter, car racks to transport your bike are on back order for 30 plus days in a lot of cases. Bike bags, a lot of those manufacturers are 8 to 10 weeks out. And even bike electronics like computers to track your distance and all of that are in really hot demand.
And I think too, as a lot of the concerts and movies and festivals that normally would happen during the summer have been are canceled, people are really looking for something fun to do this summer. So in many ways, the outdoors is where people are going.
So do we want to break down a little bit by category, some of the trends within certain areas, where are things going with the backpacking world, for instance? Anything leap out to mind as a specific direction?
Well, I would say some of the interesting things that I've thought are popping up are large manufacturers that are getting into the ultralight game, making quilts and DCF tents, which is the really lightweight fabric that you see cottage manufacturers using, but now some large manufacturers are using it as well. And I think that's really a sign of how much demand there is for that kind of gear. The lighter weight, packs down small, that kind of gear is becoming more mainstream.
Yeah, and I think before the lockdown, through hiking, the Pacific Crest Trail, the Appalachian Trail had really started to become more of a term that many people knew, trails that many people knew, and something that people were thinking about more aspirationally before they might have never heard of those trails. So obviously, the book and movie Wild was a big influence on putting the Pacific Crest Trail on a bunch of people's radar, in the same way that A Walk in the Woods, the Bill Bryson book, put the AT on many people's radar. So becoming a household name through hiking, even if it's something that people were thinking about doing after they retired, for example, I think people are becoming a lot more familiar with what those trails are and the sort of gear that would be required for those trails.
Mm-hmm. I'm thinking right now that there's got to be families who are changing their vacation plans and deciding it's going to be appropriate or good to go out on a weekend backpacking trip with the kids. So are we seeing weekenders entering the sport that in a greater number you might have expected?
I would think, right now with the normal family trip, maybe not being canceled or being rearranged in some way, that if not backpacking, car camping is definitely something that's going to be trending this summer. I actually was on a call earlier today about that.
Yeah. And I would also say that, as more and more people are living in cities these days, I think people are more looking for things that can be used for multiple activities. For example, a touring bike that can also be used as a commuting bike, or gear that's easy to store, like the folding kayaks or inflatable kayaks, so that they don't take up a lot of space, which is it's hard to find in urban environments. So there's been a lot of creativity coming out from gear manufacturers around that as well.
Yeah, you mentioned the folding kayaks, and I think that it's either a Spokane-based outfit, or at least they have a major presence there. And Oru Kayak, I think it is.
Yeah, they're kind of the forefront of that for sure. And
we have a great, great story looking at different models of Orus and how it folds up into your car. I mean, it's really amazing thinking about all the having to lift it on top of the car before, and nowadays you can just fold it up like a suitcase and throw it in the back of a sedan.
Yeah, really taking the concept of folding kayak to a whole new level, where the thing folds up into such a small space, so lightweight and transportable, that it's made it accessible to a lot of people. I would put it in the category of a game-changing design, and I'm wondering if there's other game-changing designs out there in other areas that have just altered the category somehow. You mentioned a couple lightweight backpacking ones with some of the gear that's revolutionizing things, and the touring bike, and maybe those are it.
Yeah, I mean, the Oru Kayak that we read about, they won an Outdoor Innovation Award for really, really changing the game. And, you've been around this outdoor world long enough that every few years there's something that becomes a huge aha moment. I'm thinking about the Thermarest Neo Air, which reduced the weight of a inflatable sleeping pad so much. That was a big aha moment that changed a lot of the whole camping sleeping bag world or sleeping pad world. Right now, it's nothing new for people who've been through hiking, but we are seeing quilts, which is a sleeping bag that doesn't have a bottom, essentially, popping up in all sort of mainstream retailers, mainstream brands. And it took a while for that innovation to become mainstream, but it's here now.
So talk to us about some of your best bets, favorite pieces of new gear that are coming out.
Well, so one thing that I sort of think as, I don't know if it's frivolous or really, really, really smart, but as we've talked about, I was getting into bikepacking, and there is now a radar detection system you can buy for your bike, which tells you when cars or other objects are coming from behind you, so you don't have to turn around to look or use a mirror. I think I think that has the potential to be a game changer if it works well and it helps save lives. So I'm kind of really curious about that. I haven't tried it myself yet personally, but I'm thinking about it.
Yeah, cars have that. They're mandated to have that now, new ones. And I guess it was only a matter of time before that would be adapted to use by road bikes. And it's here.
Right. It's here. And, it's $200, which in some ways seems like a lot. In other ways, it seems like if you're going down that path of bikepacking or bike commuting, it seems like a no-brainer.
Yeah, I would say some of our other favorite pieces of gear have been, we did a big study on personal locator beacons and satellite messengers, We had a writer who'd actually had a unit malfunction on him and woke up surrounded by search and rescue helicopters in the middle of the Wind River Range in Wyoming. And this really, he was calling all the I guess mission control of what happens when you hit that button, that SOS button on a search and rescue device. Where does the message go? Who the dispatchers are? It'll go to Houston, then they'll call your local home, whether that's in Virginia or in Sandpoint, and call your emergency contact and all of these different dispatching to get a helicopter to where you are. But one of the devices now, the Mini, is 3.5 ounces. You can text message from anywhere. You don't need it works with your cell phone. But with an app, essentially functions like a normal text messaging system. And for me, that's been a real game changer. I know a lot of people worry when I go solo into the mountains, and being able to have a device that not only has that SOS, but has an ability for me to say, hey, I'm going to be running a little bit late. There was too much snow on the trail, so it slowed me down. To, hey, I'm going to be home at 8. Can you have a pizza ready for me? It's a game changer.
It's important things. Pizza technology. I'm glad you mentioned the personal locator beacons, because I wanted to spend a little time talking about how technology is changing the way that we hike trails. And the personal locator beacons have vastly improved or come to be so common that they're an important feature now, I think, for most people to consider when they're hiking. It's also at the front edge of the way that so-called apps have changed the way people hike trails. I did a short section of the PCT last fall, and I was amazed that people have basically gone without guidebooks and they're using on-trail applications, and it seems to be shifting the patterns with the way people are using the trail too. They're expecting it to tell them where to camp, for instance. And so let's talk a little bit about what some of those apps are and what the upsides and downsides of their use is.
Yeah, so I would say the big app that is very popular on the big name long distance hiking trails is something called the Guthook app. It's also, I think, a company named Atlas is their overall company, but Guthook was named after a hiker friend of mine whose trail name is Guthook. He's a Knowles guide, spends a lot of time in the mountains, and I guess somehow got into app programming on the side. But it's really designed so that it works kind of like Google Maps, except for the trail. It shows you all water sources, and it'll tell you you're 3.1 miles until the next water source. This water source is seasonal, and it even has a place where people, when they have cell reception, to leave a note saying, June 4th, trickling at 1 liter per minute. So it really gives you, it creates not just a community, but some real-time information about what's going on the trail. It also shows you some, but not all the campsites. And as you said, sometimes this means Naomi was on the PCT, saw a PCT campsite this year that had, I don't know, 20
more,
tents?
Yeah, tents than I could count.
Probably way too many.
Yeah. And so in fact, I've heard that some of the trail organizations have asked Guthook to remove some of those camping designations because of that problem.
So the clear problem of potential overuse, I think, is there. And that comes too with increased use along with the apps. I think there's a larger question, maybe a philosophical one, about taking the mystery out of the experience. If you know where every water source is or every campsite is, does that so radically change the hiking experience that maybe it makes it more accessible for some people? But I guess that you can probably tell by the way I'm questioning it, the desirability, just not knowing is part, I think, of the fun or challenge or experience of a thru hike, of not knowing what you're going to experience.
Well, I have a trail for you, Phil. And it's called the Idaho Centennial Trail.
Yes, yes. And that's probably why it's high on my list. And I would do it with no apps.
That's good, because there are no apps for that
much
one.
Much of a market for the Idaho Centennial Trail.
Yeah.
But I would also say I would agree with that, and also I think what we've lost on these long trails is the exchange of information from person to person live. Like if you were going north and someone was coming south, you would exchange water information or snow information or whatever it is that you're dealing with, And now that it's just not necessary. And those people will probably pass each other, you know, maybe saying hello, maybe not. It has changed.
That's a good point. Well, there are some other trail apps out there. It seems like all the rave in the Facebook world when local people are asked about what trail to hike now isn't to recommend a guidebook, but to say to go to All Trails or something like that. That's changing the way, too, that we even resource information about where trails are. Tell us about your experience with some of those apps and which are the best ones for people to find out where trails are and what trail conditions might be like.
Yeah, I know I'm a big fan of the Gaia app, which has a functionality where you can also design your own routes and it'll work, integrate really nicely with your phone. In many ways, this has made it a lot easier for me to sit on my computer and figure out new places to go and be like, oh, I wonder if that ridge goes and map it out and then have it on my phone and make sure that when I'm out there, I'm sticking to that actual ridge that I originally had planned. Sometimes it helps me find random water sources that I might otherwise not have had on my radar. I think in many ways, Gaia has really opened up a whole world of people who are designing new routes. Which has become a lot more popular in the thru-hiking world as people have hiked something like the Pacific Crest Trail, don't want a trail where there's an app, and they want to go out and spend their winter creating some crazy route across some place that doesn't have a trail.
That seems like it's at the heart of social distancing.
I think the other thing I would add about the Gaia app is it has the ability to download topo maps onto your phone. So while you're away from cell service, the maps you can still access the maps. And I think that actually can help people learn how to read topo maps because it does show you where you are in the map. And it's much easier to understand how a topo map works if you know where you are. It takes that little piece out of the game when you're trying to learn how to read maps.
So, I would also say that, it's sad, but it's getting harder and harder to find those old USGS quad maps. And, even when you could find them, if you're out hiking for weeks at a time, you're going to be carrying pounds and pounds of paper maps. And at $7 a pop, that's going to add up.
Yeah.
You can walk from one end to the other in a day or two. In some ways, having this mapping app that has all those USGS apps on your phone already, it saves you having to go out and buy those maps. Save that room in your pack.
Yeah, there is that. I have done both. I still take the topo maps for certain select areas where I have them, but they're harder and harder to find. And for long trails, they're a challenge. And yet they have no battery or moving parts to fail.
That's a nice part. If it gets wet.
And the printed guidebook, as it used to exist, probably still does for some of the trails, has the narrow versions by pages of the USGS maps. People will cut those sections out and take the appropriate one with them, but they don't have a very big field of view. You can't see very far off the map to put yourself in context if you step off the trail.
Right.
So there may be no perfect solution other than a combination of more than one source of information.
I would agree with that.
But for those who love maps, having more sources of maps is not a bad thing at all.
Yeah. Well, and you can write notes on them. I'm probably identifying myself as something of a fossil, but taking a pen and writing a note on a water source on the back of the USGS map to me seems more natural than entering it into a gut hook app. But it may be a generational thing.
Oh, again, Phil, the Idaho Centennial Trail. That's your trail.
Not giving up my hard-fought water sources there. So let's talk about trails. The Idaho Centennial Trail is something that's on my short list that I would like to do next. It probably won't happen this summer, the way things are shaping up, but it is on my short list. This summer, I'm probably going to stay local. We have a wonderful selection of sections of trail. I may do a part of the ICT, or I may paddle for a week or two on one of our local rivers. I'm not going to say where, because I don't want to encourage people to go to everywhere I'm going to go. Tell us about your plans for the summer. You both oftentimes have adventures together weeks at a time. Any plans coming up for something fun to do?
Well, no plans together, unfortunately, because of the business. That's unfortunate, or at least any serious long-term or long-distance hiking. we try to take some kind of, we call it a corporate retreat, but it's us on a, you know, maybe 3 or 4 day hiking trip out in the woods, talking about business, talking about hiking, all of that stuff. We haven't nailed that down this year because it's still so unclear. We're not in the same geographical area, so that throws a whole nother wrench into it. But I originally was supposed to hike the Oregon Desert Trail this year, and so that's out. And bike packing, you know, who knows? I'd like to maybe do a section of the Great Divide Ride, which goes from Jasper to Mexico. And so it roughly parallels the Continental Divide Trail, but mostly on dirt roads.
Well, let's hope that's feasible.
Yes.
Liz, I know probably the urban hikes are probably not the thing to focus in on right now.
Yeah, you know, it's actually kind of sad, right? In March, I had a about 10-day urban hike planned in San Antonio, Texas that ended up getting canceled. There's a lot of unknowns right now. So as far as my hikes have been going, I've been trying to keep it local. It's actually been a really good excuse to explore new areas around me that I always knew were there, but it never really wanted to figure out the permit process or all that. And in some ways it's actually been pretty cool to way to force me to find some new hiking spots.
I guess that's a good thing. It requires that we all exhibit a little bit of imagination and nimbleness.
Exactly.
Well, we're going to have you back on the show sometime when there's updates on products or topics or categories that you'd like to share, maybe a preview of the fall or winter or one of the outdoor shows. But for now, any closing thoughts for our guests?
Yeah, I would say this is a great time to get outdoors, and getting out of your house is a good thing. Can't stress that enough, that if we've learned anything from this experience, getting out and doing things outdoors is exactly what we all need to clear our minds and feel calmer in these uncertain times.
Yeah, and try to find your place in nature, because I truly believe there is a place for everyone in the outdoors, and we want to try to encourage that and help people get out and find their own place in nature.
Mm-hmm. And I'm sure you both would encourage people to check out Treeline Review.
Of course. Yeah,
of course.
Okay.
TreelineReview.com.
TreelineReview.com. Very good. Well, we're going to end our show there today. Thank you both for joining us. Once again, this is a pre-recorded show. So anything you've heard, you may want to verify. Our intention is to play this within a few days of its recording. But as always, information does change. So this is 88.5 KRFY. You can listen to the podcast or the recorded podcast of this after it's played at krfy.org. This is our community conversation. Thank you very much.